Welcome to the Hey Soul Sister podcast, where Mel Histon will guide you through life's big questions and bring you one step closer to doing this crazy journey as best you can.
In season two of the Hey Soul Sister podcast, I did an episode called Horrible Bosses, where some special guests of mine, Belinda Smith and Nadine Barreto, and I shared some horrible boss experiences. Well, sisters, just like the movie of the same name, Horrible Bosses, this is the sequel. You see, I'm not quite done yet. I still have more stories to share.
You got more bridges to burn.
Chet Smell, you can hear talking right now, owner of Newcastle Podcast Station and producer extraordinaire and radio presenter and stand-up comedian. Mel apparently has lots of horrible boss stories to share.
Well, showbiz is a nightmare. I don't know if you know. Like, there's all those stories where, oh, my card didn't work one day and then you didn't have a job anymore. That stuff does go on.
Yeah.
So you'll hear about some of mine.
Now, Michelle is the brains behind the Being More Human movement and consultancy. She's had 20 years experience of providing guidance and leadership development and recruitment support and strengthening cultures in organizations across a whole range of industries. So Michelle's our expert.
It's cool how you talk about culture, because that's a big thing, right? I mean, just recently I went to a workplace where the culture used to be great, and then I walked in recently, I thought, dang, this is boring as, you
and
know.
Had the boss changed?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
A fish really does rot from the head down.
And you can smell the stink on the stock exchange.
That you can.
Tell us, what was it like working in radio? Because you've worked in radio for a long time.
Yeah, it's very full on, I'd have to say. Yeah, so some of my early experiences, you get treated really badly when you're at the bottom of the chain, and then obviously when you climb to like a Kyle or Jackie O. Like, I can remember my first job was as a phone person for Kyle and Jack, and there was a guy that I actually did radio with in the early days, a guy called Tom, and he used to be their producer. God bless him, he was working, I don't know, like, I would do the night show as well, come in, do the night show, he was still working there for them.
Wow.
All to the rest end of the day. They'd go out at whatever time in the morning. And then one day I saw that Carl just fired him. You're fired. Get out, Tom. I know now he works for Fitzy and Whipper on Nova Breakfast in Sydney. But that's how it often is. And that sort of stuff is just, it's gut-wrenching when it happens to you.
Yeah. Has anything like that ever happened to you personally?
A few early ones. First, I was really excited when I was young to got to go to Triple J to Adam and Will, when they were on Breakfast in Sydney. And Will and I get on quite well these days, I have to say. But at the time, I was sort of a young upstart comedian and he was at the top of his game.
They were a real power couple. Oh. I used to listen to them religiously. I had to drive to Gosford every morning, do the commute. And I used to listen to them every morning and just love them.
And Adam, like, both smart as a whip. Like, I remember when I did a job in the traffic helicopter and I used to have to do banter with Adam when he was on the ABC, and just so intelligent. But when I was in this job, right, I was doing mornings with Will, and then the night time I was doing the comedy circuit with him, and he would just ignore me, like,
really?
To the point where, like, you ask him a question or something and you just pretend like you weren't there, like in school or something like that. And then I got back to Melbourne and did a stand-up show about it in St Kilda, and someone wrote on the Triple J wall, oh, this Melbourne comedian said, like, you had your head so far up your ass you blacked out and all that. And it was me. And Triple J got in contact with me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no more Triple J. But Will was actually good about it. He goes, oh, sorry for that or whatever.
Oh, good on you.
So that was...
Pretty brutal. Like, that sounds like a pretty brutal sort of culture.
It is, and it is, because when you start at the bottom, people, how do you combat people who are just rude like that? Like, I remember I used to work really hard on this Nova Night show that I was on, and it was a solo show, but I had, like, Dicko on from Idol, this was back in the day when I first started, and, like, Charlotte Dawson, heaps of great people on my show. I was always asking the boss, what can I do better? And I remember one day he was like, you know what it's like, Sarge, breakfast at the top, then days, and then you're, like, nights, you're down on the floor, you're, like, below the floor. That's how important you are.
Michelle, what are you thinking when you're hearing that?
The first thing I'm thinking is there's plenty of work for us to do. But it's surprising, you know, it, you know, you're talking from a radio or a media sort of background, but
and this is really common in, I think
it actually doesn't matter what industry you're talking about. If you happen to be in an industry where it has that very hierarchical top down, you have to prove yourself, then you get to be up the next notch.
Okay. Like PR or anything, Devil Wears Prada.
Even healthcare. Healthcare works exactly the same, right? So when you're the doctor, you get to treat everyone else like Scheisenhauser.
Oh, okay.
There's lots of different industries, and healthcare specifically comes to mind, where it is very hierarchical and it's dog eat dog. And like the enrolled nurses are treated, well, the assistants in nursing are treated a particular way, the enrolled nurses, then the registered nurses, then you go up the rung till you get to the doctors, right? And what it allows you to do is you then think it's okay to be a bastard to, in order to get ahead.
Because you were treated badly once.
In fact, it's not just, yes, because you were treated badly, but also then what happens is your poor treatment of someone else is rewarded by you being promoted.
Oh.
So that's how it works, because the people that decide on promotions go, oh, yeah, that person's one of us. They can handle themselves. So we're going to allow them to float to the top.
Well, I can actually say that I am a rat specimen of that. So when I move to breakfast, inevitably, because of my awesome talent, I would just think these people are all beneath me. I'd just be telling everyone what to do and just...
Leaders drive culture in organisations, and that's how it works.
You know what? That sounds a little bit like the trades industry. Tradies. I know now that there's a law against, you know, initiation and bastardisation for apprentices, but I remember when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I had mates that got apprenticeships and they were totally bullied, or they would have to go through these initiation rites. Like, I remember a mate of mine, you know, he said that they would on a Friday afternoon make him run around the workshop and shoot him with the nail gun, and he had to kind of dodge the nails and was treated really poorly. But then he was exactly like the healthcare worker. Then when he became a full tradie and he became a site manager, he's like, okay, shit flows down. Like,
and it's no different. Yeah. I remember in year 7 at high school, and the big thing was, had you had your head flushed in the toilet yet as a year 7 person? Do you know what I mean? By a year 10er or something like that. So it's not just workplace behaviour, it's human behaviour across the board. Yeah. And that's important to remember when you're thinking about what then to do about it.
So, Michelle, in your experience dealing with different workplaces and different industries, are there some certain types of horrible bosses, things that bosses do that you would go, okay, do you know what, that's a general,
it's a narcissistic
attribute.
Boss, or that's a boss with, you know, a low level self-esteem,
I guess at the risk of categorizing human behavior into 3, that's what I'm about to do. This is actually research, and it's tools that we use in organizations all the time, so I know there's solid basis for what I'm about to say. You either have people who have more of a connection with passive behavior, people who are more connected to aggressive behavior, or people who are more connected to constructive behavior. The best bosses are the constructive ones. The worst bosses are the aggressive ones. And the ones that you kind of like, but you're a bit annoyed by because they don't do too much, they're the passive ones.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I'm just thinking of all my bosses. Yeah. I'm like, he was like that.
Yeah, totally.
Can they have a mixture though? There was one where I was fired from a show once, and I went in and he said to me at the end, oh, that's so strange, because I thought you'd be a crier when I fired you. Yeah, and I'm so surprised you didn't cry. And he wasn't usually as mean as that, but can they be a hybrid?
You've got to remember, like, there's a very interesting statistic about CEOs that tells us that on average 21% of CEOs are psychopaths.
Really?
Okay, so that's an incredibly high number. That's American research. It's an incredibly high number, and it would probably be fair to deduce that you could say a similar percentage of leaders and managers in general would also be in that category.
Yep.
Right. So when you start to understand that, then you start to go, okay, you know, what is a psychopath? And you start digging deep in and around that. It's not hard to see why there's so many organizations with really high bullying and harassment claims, really high mental health issues, etc. The list goes on, because these things are all connected.
So, Michelle, what would be like an attribute of a psychopathic CEO? What sort of behaviors would they exhibit?
The most common attribute of a psychopathic CEO is having little to no empathy for another human. Yeah. So, in other words, they're constantly making decisions based on shareholders, profit, how they want their brand to look in the marketplace, and they really don't care in any shape or form about their people, and they believe that if people leave, they just get new people. So it's not a big deal to them.
Wow. And I suppose that's like a psychopath in life.
That's right. Yeah, it's exactly the same. A psychopath in life is someone who doesn't show or doesn't have the emotional capacity to show empathy.
And that's something really wrong with our culture, isn't it? That these people have risen to the top and are getting all the accolades.
Well, it's wrong with our culture, but you could also be empathetic toward them as well, because if you try and understand where someone's come from and the challenges they might have had in their world and the trauma they've experienced as humans, then you understand why people are in prisons. You understand why people are psychopaths. You understand. So I'm not saying it excuses the behavior. There's no excuse for it,
yep.
But it certainly helps us to be more human and to understand it a little bit.
Support a sister and leave us a review whenever you listen to the podcast.
When you're coming into a culture, is there a way that you can look at it and then see everything in the workplace and make it work for you? For example, I had this scenario where I'd worked in Cap City Radio for a long time and I got a super lucrative opportunity to host a breakfast show in the Sunshine Coast, right? And my friends or some people who'd worked regional before, which we call in the biz regional, they say don't go in like a bull in a china shop because it's not going to work the same as a Cap City Radio station. So I went in like a bull in a china shop. I'm like, your website's crap. This is terrible. You're not updating this and that and everything. And then eventually, like, I got fired very quickly. And yeah, so is there a way that you can walk into a workplace and look around and go, okay, this is happening like this. This is how I'm going to play it. Because from then on, I developed this philosophy of no matter how badly or poorly I was treated, I was just going to smile and wave and not tell anyone what I thought of anything. And that's worked really well for me in companies since then on.
You've gone one extreme to the other, though.
And I've stayed employed for so freaking long.
Is your goal to stay employed or is your goal to be an authentic human? Let's go back to the psychopath comment just for a second, because I think what needs to be talked about, at least at some level, is this idea of power and control.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is that drives all of these behaviors we're talking about.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what industry you're in. It doesn't matter if you're in a small, medium, large-sized business. It doesn't matter if you run your own businesses. Plenty of people who run their own businesses are pathetic at running their own businesses because they won't delegate.
Yeah.
Because it's all about power and control. They're control freaks.
Yeah.
Right? And then they wonder why their business doesn't work. Well, surprise, surprise, because you won't let anyone help you.
Don't look at me. I won't let anyone edit our program.
But you wouldn't want that. You wouldn't want the fact that you're not letting anyone else to edit your programs be the limiting factor in your success if the business was otherwise growing.
Yes.
At some point, as a CEO or a leader or a manager, you have to be able to shine the light on yourself and go, are the behaviors that I'm currently doing getting the outcomes that I want? Yes or no?
A CEO, wow. Maybe we'll get there one day, Mel. I don't think we're psychopathic enough.
I don't know.
Getting back to my question, though, is there a way you can walk into an organization, scope it out, and make it successful for you?
Yeah. So what often happens in a recruitment process is very often the candidate doesn't feel like they're the one with leverage. They feel like the organization is the one with leverage because they have the job and they're going to give it to you if they deem that you're good enough as a human.
Absolutely.
And that's where people go wrong.
I was going to say, and quite often you go and there's a panel of four people. It's like you.
That's true.
And four people.
And they're all on the other side.
Exactly.
Why doesn't one of them sit on your side?
Yeah, exactly.
What you have to remember in the process of recruitment is that every single thing the organization does and everything they say and how they position people and how they talk to you on the phone and how they message you or how they don't get back to you as a candidate, all of that is communicating everything about what their organizational culture is like. So you have to be able to read those cues. I'll give you an example. A long time ago, before I ran Being More Human, I was in between jobs and I was negotiating with a second employer and I didn't need to leave my job for any reason. I was perfectly happy doing what I was doing. So if that second person wanted to get me, it had to be a very good offer.
That's right.
Put something on the table that would convince me.
It's all about who has the bigger leverage.
Has the bigger leverage. Yeah. So I knew that the only reason I would ever leave and make that shift, I'm not motivated overly by money, but the thing that I was motivated by was organizational culture. So that poor guy who I first spoke to, the owner of the new organization, I grilled him. I reckon I spoke to him for 2.5 hours in the very first conversation.
And that probably comes from your years of experience and an understanding of different workplace cultures, because I imagine most people, when they apply for a job, they're kind of like, okay, I'm going for a promotion, or this is more, this new job is more money, or it's a field that I want to get into. They're not necessarily going in thinking, oh, I really want to work for this place because it has a great culture. Whereas you must have been quite aware of that through your own experiences.
Yeah, it's what I do for a living. So I wasn't about to jump ship unless the culture was better.
Okay, what about having a baby? Now, I've heard from people and I've had similar experience with my life that, and this was, as Mel and I discussed, it was a very male-dominated field that this person was in, and there was one female executive in the room, and they discussed that they needed to manage this girl out who was pregnant because that was just going to be annoying to have her around once she had a baby. So they were going to put her off in some role that didn't matter or something like that. With my circumstance, a little bit, I've had that sort of thing where, you know, you push back and say, hey guys, you know, I want to come back part time, and they're like, oh no, casual, you know, that sort of thing. And you know your rights, but I mean, I've studied law, but often, and you're talking just before about that leverage, often when you have a baby, your leverage has sort of disappeared a little bit. On the other end of the spectrum, there are these people out there who can offer, you know, to be more available and all that sort of thing. Or how do you go about when your rights aren't adhered to by an employer?
That's why the law exists.
Yeah.
Because the law is something that is, in theory, a great thing to do. It's like a baseline of behavior that's expected across the board in our organizations and communities. And then there's reality.
Yeah, that's so true.
And 99% of time, there's not a lot of overlap.
Yep.
Between those, even though there should be, even though it's against the law to be able to do X, Y, and Z.
That's so true, isn't it?
Just the practical implementation from what I see in organizations all the time is regardless of the law.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to do this.
Yeah, I've worked for two organizations like that. If they didn't like somebody for whatever reason, they would just walk them, literally walk on a Friday afternoon, walk into their office or their desk and say, we need to talk. Boom, you'd never see them again.
None of this three warnings business or anything like that.
There's no three warnings. And if you tried to take them, because I knew a few people, and they'd be like, I'm going to take them for unfair dismissal, company didn't care.
But if you think of it from their point of view, that's right.
They're going to get better law. I know that from studying law. The person with the most money gets the best justice.
Yeah. And you've got to think of the lens that they're looking at through the world. You know, they're not viewing humans that are sitting around them as people that are really being able to bring success and competitive advantage and everything to the business. They're viewing humans as bums on seats or numbers or this person in that department, but they wouldn't care if it was James or Judy or Jim. But again, it all comes back to their culture, because that is what you're describing, is a very aggressive work culture.
I once upon a time worked for a very male dominated work environment. I worked for a joint venture, and it was between a very well-known bank and a construction company and another celebrity company. So they all came together as a joint venture. I was 27. So I look back now and I go, I was a baby.
Yeah.
And I'd be sitting at these joint venture meetings, and pretty much all the other blokes or other people at the table were men, and they were men in their 50s and 60s. And I used to sit there petrified through those meetings, because the men, the way they spoke to each other, they would just fire arrows across each other at the table. I would be so scared to say anything. And I remember one day I was away on a business trip and having lunch with a supplier, and I got a phone call from one of the joint venture team members. He was a 65-year-old banker. Substitute the B for W. And anyway, and I remember he called me and he tore strips off me because he had a very weird name and I had used a wrong letter in his name in an email. And I remember I was devastated and stood on the side of the street, because I walked out of the cafe, stood on the side of the street sobbing, like, and sobbing so hard because he had torn strips off me, and he'd be like, girly. I was standing on the side of the street in Brisbane sobbing so hard that this hot young guy came up to me. I just remember thinking, if I wasn't sobbing right now, no, but like sobbing so hard. And he came up and he was like, oh my God, are you okay? What's the matter? Because I was like, you know, snot dribbling and snot coming out. So, you know, I had that experience, but I go, working in that place, I lived with fear all the time, but it was very male dominated and it was older men. So the long story, but my question to you, Michelle, is do you find a difference between organizations that are more male dominated in a management sense or female? Do you notice a difference in terms of culture?
Or is it more like about the type of guy, the type of girl?
Yeah, it's much more to do with the thinking style and the leadership style of the individual and much less to do with gender.
Yeah.
You know, we want to make it about gender because it's an easy argument and people want to go, see, therefore women bosses are better or male bosses are better. No, that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about their leadership style.
So, Shell, we've talked about some pretty bad bosses, some horrible bosses here. What makes a great boss?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just thinking of the best boss I ever had, and it was years ago when I worked in Kenya, and I was working for an aid organization over there, and his name was Fred, and he's a Ghanaian guy, and he was incredible. He had this amazing ability to both kind of sit with you, because I was super young at the time, to sit with you and build your capability and capacity at the same time of setting a goal or a target that was just slightly what you thought was beyond your reach. So in other words, he helped you and supported you to achieve these things you thought were not quite possible, which then built your confidence and built your confidence and built your confidence. So he was fantastic. He's an incredible human in so many ways, but hands down the best boss that I've had.
Yep.
Let's get soulful on social media. Search the Sister Code Facebook page and follow us on Instagram.
Yes, which leads me into, if somebody is experiencing a boss, a horrible boss, what can they do? Like, what's the first port of call?
So you have to really, I guess there's so many contextual elements to this, but basically what you have to be very, very clear about is what is inside your circle of control and what is outside your circle of control. So by that, what can you actually do about it? And what can you not do about it? You can't go fire your boss, so that's outside your circle of control, even though that's awfully tempting.
Yeah.
And most organisations, depending on their size and structure, should have some kind of grievance procedure in place. They should have somewhere where you speak to that person first. If that doesn't work, then you go to the next level, to the next level. At the end of the day, nothing beats human conversation. And it's an awfully brave conversation to have, but if you can sit down with that person and just say, the way we interact doesn't work for me.
Gee, that's really cool. To be honest, some of my horrible bosses, I'd never even thought to do that.
Because what you've got to remember about horrible, this is really important about horrible bosses, is
sometimes they don't.
Mostly they don't know they're being horrible. About 70% of the time, they're blissfully unaware about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't excuse it.
Yeah.
But it means that you can help them come to an understanding of how they're impacting on you. Then they get to choose if they want to continue to be horrible or not. But that's a very brave conversation.
Yeah.
And particularly if you're young, particularly if you're a woman, particularly if you're more passive, it's going to feel harder for you to have that conversation. So sometimes you need to have someone else in the room with you if you're going to have that conversation.
Yeah. And so is there ever a time when you need to seek assistance outside of the organisation? Like you might have had a chat with your boss or gone to HR, but the issue hasn't been resolved.
Yeah, definitely. If you've tried all of those things and they haven't worked, then you would go straight to Fair Work Australia and report the matter through the bullying and harassment line.
It was interesting when I worked at WorkCover, and I think I left there probably 14 or 15 years ago, workplace bullying and harassment was just coming on the radar for WorkCover, and I remember starting to write articles about it for the WorkCover News magazine, and it was such a new concept back then. I mean, I suppose bullying and harassment's always been an issue, but all of a sudden it became a workplace safety issue.
Yeah,
and we were starting to have those conversations and encourage people, okay, well, actually, if you're being bullied or harassed at work, your boss is actually breaking the law.
Yeah, and it's an economic issue because there's more than $30 billion a year spent on bullying and harassment in organisations. That's before you even start touching mental health or any of those other things.
Yep.
So maybe they should stop employing these psychos and letting them reign. Maybe they should be talking to you about who goes at the top of the tree.
Yeah, I think what we are starting to see, though, is a real shift toward organisations that are more about social impact. They're more about ethics. They're more about truly believing in people's authentic capability.
Yeah.
And creating a culture that nurtures and supports that. Yep. And strangely enough, it's not rocket science. It makes more money.
Yeah,
of course.
And this is what people are just starting to understand. You know what? If I'm a bastard, I make less money.
Yeah.
If I'm a good bloke, I make more money. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, absolutely. And so to wrap up, Michelle, talk to us a little bit more around positive workplace culture, and what is it when you're working with clients, organizations, what is it that you're generally advice you're giving them around how they can have a great workplace culture?
So pretty much 100% of the time.
Team days.
Yeah, you could do the team days.
You're on the green team.
They have short-term kind of impact. They're good, but they have short-term impact.
Well, that's interesting.
The one skill that is very undeveloped and the reason that we're basically there is people don't know how to talk to each other.
Yeah.
They don't know how to put their thoughts forward in a logical manner, and they don't know how to be respectful to someone else whilst they're doing that.
I can't stand banal office chat. I don't know about you guys, but you know when you go into the kitchen at work, oh, that pasta looks really good. Oh, what are you having for lunch?
But you know what? You have to remember that's really important. Banal office chat actually contributes to the emotional connection between human beings.
Yeah, I know.
So if you do banal office chat with me.
If they were like, hey, Mel, what do you think of life?
If you and I are doing banal office chat and eating cake together, as an example, then next time when there's something tricky that you need to talk to me about or that I need to talk to you about, that's easier.
Yeah.
Because we've already built that connection.
Well, thank you to both of you for coming in and having that chat today for the sequel, Horrible Bosses 2. And if anybody out there would like some more information about Michelle and being more human, you can reach out to Michelle via
beingmorehuman.com.au.
There you go. Michelle's got lots of great advice for individuals and organisations on how to be a better human.
And you're going to hate this podcast because someone's going to message you at 2 a.m. in the morning or something and be like, I heard that podcast. Help me with my horrible boss.
Ah, it's all good. Wouldn't be the first person that's done that.
Thanks, sisters.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Hey Soul Sister with Mel Histon. What would help you on your crazy life journey? Email Melissa at thesistercode.com.